We are continuing to take your calls on the coronavirus this week. What do you want to know? Call with your questions. What are you wondering about? What's weighing on your mind today that maybe wasn't even a question you had yesterday? Join us on the line to help answer your questions is Dr. Natasha Hochberg, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. She's also an infectious disease physician at the Boston Medical Center. Welcome back again, Dr. Hochberg.
Hi, happy to be with you.
Also on the line is WBUR's Common Health Editor, Carrie Goldberg. Carrie, good to talk to you again.
Thanks. You too, Tiziana.
So, Carrie, before we start taking calls, can you just give us the latest on how the Commonwealth is addressing the outbreak?
Yes. Well, as you heard, we are not getting a shelter-in-place order, at least not at this point. There's money flowing to the local boards of health. And then I have a couple, three news items that we haven't really covered yet on our air. One is this very interesting development that Kearney Hospital in Dorchester, actually, we've covered that a little bit, but Kearney Hospital is going to be transformed into a sort of a dedicated coronavirus care center by its parent company, Steward Healthcare, which is a for-profit healthcare company. Kearney has been, you know, kind of troubled over the years, but I think it's an interesting development because I suspect that we'll be seeing more of this, which is dedicated facilities or sections of hospitals that will be for coronavirus.
So, Carrie, are you saying the hospital's just going to be for coronavirus treatment?
That is what Steward Healthcare says. It will be a dedicated care center for treating patients who test positive for COVID-19.
All right.
So yes, it wasn't a particularly viable hospital before, and now it will be devoted specifically to coronavirus care is what Steward is saying.
Okay.
Second, there's some DNA news that's hot off the presses, which is that the Broad Institute, which I'm sure you know is this genetics powerhouse in Cambridge affiliated with Harvard and MIT, they have one of the biggest genetic sequencing facilities in the world. They are being pulled in by the state to help with testing. So they have this like high throughput testing capability, and their scientists have been working around the clock to adapt what they've got to be able to do coronavirus testing. And now both the state and the Broad are saying they are going to be helping with testing. They should be able by early next week to process more than 1,000 tests a day. So that will really bring us up to the capacity that we've been needing to be able to really test patients in Massachusetts.
All right. Terrific. And Carrie, just very briefly, how does that coincide with what's happening nationally?
Well, I mean, nationally, it's just a great big struggle to ramp up testing to the levels that we need, right? To be able to diagnose patients, to be able to get a better handle on where the virus is spreading. And so what I like about it is it's kind of bringing our biomedical Boston brains to bear to attack what is a very national problem.
And Dr. Hochberg, being one of our biomedical Boston brains, let me first ask you, what's it like at the hospital right now?
Well, it's a good question. So obviously, you know, we're trying to get prepared as best we can. And I'd say that's going on across the state. It's the infrastructure that we need to take care of patients effectively. So just a lot of people are dedicating a lot of time, both sort of taking care of patients at this point, but also just making sure the infrastructure is there to ramp up.
And do you have that infrastructure? We just heard Senator Ed Markey at the top of the hour about, you know, hospitals and healthcare workers having to reuse equipment, massive shortages. We're hearing reports of hospitals like Cambridge Health Alliance and the Brigham and Women asking for equipment like face masks, face shields. Is BMC experiencing anything similar to that?
So we're working through our numbers in terms of what we have, and we're sort of adjusting policies as we need to. And so it's a situation that's constantly evolving, and we're looking for guidance also from sort of federal authorities on what is safe to do. You know, can we reuse any of the equipment? And if so, what can be reused? And how, but we're, you know, I would say it's just sort of a developing situation at this point while we all figure out what's the best thing to do to keep ourselves safe and our patients taken care of.
I guess I have to ask you, Dr. Hochberg, are you worried?
So I think that, you know, as you said, it's Boston. We've got a lot of Boston brains that are working on it. So, you know, I'm really glad because of that. I would say that this has been an effort by the Health Department. It's been an amazing effort. Hospitals, not only physicians and others, but the sort of administration to really grapple with So, you know, so Dr. Huckbert, it's not an easy situation.
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt you there. Yeah. You're cutting out a bunch, and I do want our listeners to understand that as part of the coronavirus response, we are exclusively talking to people over lines. We don't have anyone in the studio anymore. So forgive us if we're having a little bit of cut in and out of lines, because we're redoing how we do radio right now, too. Let's use this opportunity to grab a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Alex is on the line from Walpole. Alex, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. My hands get quite dry in the wintertime, and especially if I'm washing a lot like I've been doing, as I'm told. Anyway, they get cracked, microfissures, they actually start to bleed.
Yeah.
So I'm concerned about, I mean, if transmission is fraught when it comes to touching your face, I'm wondering what kind of element this introduces to possible contamination.
It's a great question. I'm looking at the cracks in the backs of my own hands right now, Alex. So Dr. Huckbert, this faithful hand washing that's producing these fissures in the backs of hands, does that actually increase concerns about virus transmission? So wait, I think we lost her. Carrie, have we heard any guidance from the Department of Public Health or other offices about this concern? I've heard this repeatedly. Wait a minute, I'm washing my hands, but they're actually getting bad. Is that putting me at greater risk?
Right. I have not heard any guidance about that. I have a ridiculously practical suggestion that I'm sure you've thought of, Alex, which is to use moisturizing soap as you do it and other emollients. But otherwise, no. We know, I mean, what experts are saying is that the main method of transmission is through droplets that come from the upper respiratory system. So if you're worried about, like, virus getting into your blood through your hands, I have not heard anything about that.
Okay, that's comforting. And Alex, hopefully that's comforting to you too. We do have Dr. Huckbert back on the line on a cell phone. Let's just check that out. Dr. Huckbert, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Great.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. So let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have Joe on the line from Northampton. Joe, go ahead.
Yes, my question is that we have a couple of summer cottages that we do a summer rental for on Cape Cod. And I know it's some time off, but we're going to begin our rentals in the middle of May this year. And just wondering what the outlook on that will be, whether we're going to be able to go forward or whether we're going to have to cancel our season.
Should you do it or not, in other words?
Exactly.
What do you think, Dr. Huckberg?
I think nobody has a crystal ball, unfortunately. We'd all like to anticipate exactly what's going to happen. You know, I think that we're increasingly knowing we need to sort of put in social isolation measures for a while to come. And my hope is that things are ready for you to go by the end of May. But I can't guarantee that. But that would be my hope for you. So I think it's impossible to give you a definitive answer.
And Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg, what are we hearing about the efficacy of cleaning services, of you know, deep cleaning of houses? One could imagine someone saying, okay, well, there's only going to be three of us. We'll shelter in place in that house if we rent it. But I'm sure part of the concern is, can that house then be cleaned and safe after one family leaves? Again, any guidance on that yet or looking forward on those questions?
Well, so I'm so glad you raised that, TC. And I mean, we have been being told that, you know, cleaning with bleach and other effective cleaning agents should, in fact, kill the virus. And there was a paper that came out just today in the New England Journal of Medicine that was talking about this question of to what extent the virus can be transmitted on surfaces and also in the air. And it concluded that that this new coronavirus doesn't seem to linger very much in the air and it doesn't linger on surfaces for any longer than SARS did back in the early 2000s. So the thinking is that there must be a different reason why it's so infectious. Maybe it's because people without symptoms are transmitting it quite a bit, or maybe because there's a lot of virus in the upper respiratory system, in the nose and the throat. And I really wanted to ask Dr. Huckbert about this. Like, what is it looking like in terms of this virus and how it gets transmitted?
So I think we're pretty clear about the transmission. It's everything that you sort of said so far in terms of droplet transmission. And just to reiterate to everybody that, you know, the important thing is that because droplets are transmitted about 6 feet away, that that's why we're really coming up with those measures of sort of maintaining your distance from other people so that you're not getting coughed on. But I think your point about these sort of virus sort of resting on surfaces is a good one. The data that you sort of talked about show that it can be on surfaces. So it can last on surfaces, cardboard for about a day, plastics up to 72 hours. So it can rest on these surfaces, and that's why we're emphasizing the importance of cleaning off those surfaces. So if you can imagine that every surface is potentially covered with this sort of virus, you want to make sure that you're cleaning it before you're touching it and therefore potentially touching your mouth or face and becoming infected.
Let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We have Bill on the line from Watertown. Bill, what's your question?
So I've got a question related to transmission in warmer weather.
Go ahead.
And I've read a lot of things that say, well, we'll have to see. But right now we've got cases in Singapore. We've got cases in Spain. And those regions are already warm. I'm wondering whether there's enough data to determine whether the virus is less transmittable in warmer weather with the data that's already out there in regions that are warm now.
Terrific. And I imagine both of you could have perspective on this. Why don't we start with Dr. Hochberg?
Sure. So it's a great point. What we know is in general that humidity affects the transmission of viruses, particularly influenza that causes the flu. And so we hoped that in sort of, you know, warmer weather, when it's more humid, there's not going to be as much transmission. But you're exactly right. We're seeing cases in warmer countries right now, like Singapore. And so, you know, it's possible that the humidity and the temperature are not going to have as much of an effect as we would hope.
And Carrie, is there anything additional that you've seen in your reporting or in the literature to help answer that question?
Well, it's kind of just a damned if you do, damned if you don't. It would be nice if this virus were like the flu and it really receded over the summer. On the other hand, you know, a lot of people are talking about the 1918 flu and how it came roaring back in the fall. So I don't know which is worse.
Okay. We've got lots of calls, so let's just keep going. Thanks for that, Carrie. 1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation. David's on the line from Reading. David, go ahead.
Hi, I'm a physician on the north side of Boston. I do primarily inpatient work. And my question is about the testing. So my understanding is the CDC guidelines currently suggest specific criteria for testing COVID. And what I'm seeing in a lot of the patients that are admitted on our services are patients who are admitted for things other than what we would traditionally think would be a viral illness and subsequently are getting testing for COVID. What that then results in is a significant depletion of resources, masks, PPEs, gowns, et cetera. And I'm wondering if you had any thoughts about, to the extent possible, are we actually over-testing on patients,
that's a really interesting
which is
question.
Then depleting these very valuable resources.
Thanks for that, David. Dr. Hochberg.
Yeah, I think it is a really important question. I think we're grappling with similar things. Of exactly who do you test. The problem is it's going to be a balance between wanting to make sure if somebody's hospitalized and they have compatible symptoms that we're not missing them, because then it's potential risk for healthcare workers as well as other patients in the hospital. So I think the good news is that the health department has done an amazing job in terms of increasing the availability of testing. And as was said before, commercial labs are really getting online now to increase the availability of testing. So our capacity is markedly increasing. That being said, the issue of PPE is a real one. And so I think it's a balance of, do you want to have somebody in the hospital that's potentially infected that you don't know about or not?
Let's take another call. We've got Kathy from Mount Desert Island, Maine. Kathy, welcome. What's your question?
Thank you. My husband is heading to the Boston airport as we speak to pick up our son, who was having a semester abroad in Denmark. Obviously, that semester abroad was canceled. A friend of mine said they should, especially my son, because he's been traveling for 24 hours from Europe, he should remove his clothes before he comes into the house.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, is that taking it a bit too far?
Carrie Goldberg, has there been any guidance for travelers on anything like that?
I have not heard anything like that. Frankly, what I'm flashing to right now is, I don't know if you read that Norway wrote that it considered the United States to be an underdeveloped healthcare system, and therefore they were, you know, they sort of were cautioning their citizens about the United States. And so I'm actually thinking it might be kind of a good thing to be coming from Denmark, another civilized Scandinavian country, and maybe your son's chances of carrying the virus are actually lower than if he had been here.
And Dr. Hochberg,
Based
on what we know about how the virus does or does not exist on surfaces, is that a precaution that would be wise or necessary for the family?
I think the most important is that he's your son, and welcome back to your son. I'm sorry about his missed semester away, but I think the most important really is that he's washing his hands. And if he's, you know, has traveled through an endemic area, that he's potentially sort of isolating himself from you all. And that also depends on who he's staying in the house with. So obviously we know there's certain people that are going to be at higher risk that we do not want to get exposed. And that's older individuals, people with underlying medical problems like diabetes or heart disease or any other immunocompromising condition. And we really don't want those people to get exposed.
And Dr. Hochberg, are you saying that he should isolate himself from the rest of the family in the house? And if so, for how long?
So if he's come from a setting where there are cases, but that's really only from sort of those level three high risk countries, then it is recommended that he sort of isolate himself from other people. If he's not coming from one of the higher risk countries, then he just needs to monitor and sort of make sure he doesn't develop symptoms.
Okay, let's try to grab a couple more calls. The lines are quite full. Sean's on the line from Dorchester. Sean, go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'm calling from Dorchester, and I'm asking about my mom who's traveling. She's a senior, 72 years old, and she's in Alabama. My question is, should we have her return back to Boston quickly, or should she stay as long as she's been, you know, as long as she had originally planned?
Great question. Dr. Hochberg.
So I think it depends on what resources she has in Alabama. If she's got somebody that she can stay with there safely for the time being, I think that would be a better option. I'm really cautioning older travelers and people with underlying medical conditions from traveling right now. I think it's puts you at higher risk of getting exposed. So that sort of depends a little bit on your personal situation, though.
And Dr. Hochberg, to add to that, we had a listener write in earlier today and say, what about people who have older adult parents who have spent their winters in Florida? Should they be staying in Florida or should they be coming back?
I would have them stay where they are. I think if you're an older adult, we don't want you getting exposed right now. And so your best bet is going to be to stay where you are and to really try to eliminate contact with other people that could expose you.
Okay, let's try to grab at least one more call. We've got Barbara on the line from Needham. Barbara, go ahead.
Hi there. I am a retired nurse practitioner. My concern is I'm 81 years old, and I've gotten news that supermarkets will open at 6 a.m. to allow senior citizens to shop only if they're over 60. And I think that's a misguided effort.
Why do you think that's misguided?
Well, number one, of course, there'll be probably many other seniors, and we don't know who's a carrier.
I see.
There'll be young people working in the store. And, of course, you did answer some of this about...
I get you now, though, Barbara, and I'm sorry. We're tight on time, and I want to make sure to get an answer for you. Carrie Goldberg, have you heard conversations about that? I know you're part of a team of people who have been reporting on all kinds of local responses to the virus.
Yes, we have. I mean, basically, we've just seen senior, you know, elders trying to isolate themselves from others as much as possible, but we have not gotten a sort of a all seniors should stay home kind of a directive. I'm curious what Dr. Hochberg thinks.
My suggestion is you really want to eliminate your contact with other people. I think it's a higher risk group, and we know there's more potential problems in that group, and so. You know, I would urge older adults to stay home. I think the same thing with people with underlying medical problems. And to be frank, at this point, we're really entering a phase where the less people come in contact with each other, the less potential there is for exposure.
and the less overwhelmed our hospitals are going to get.
So we are not going to get to all of the calls today. Callers, as you know, we've been doing this daily call-in. We will continue to do it. I'm sorry if we didn't get to your call today. We will do this again tomorrow. I do want to paraphrase one last call asking whether or not it is safe to swim in a chlorinated pool.
So that should be safe to swim in a chlorinated pool as long as you know that they're actually sort of chlorinating effectively and that you're not coming into contact with surfaces at the pool area that they're potentially not clean. Again, we just want to limit exposure to potential surfaces that might have the virus.
That's Dr. Natasha Hochberg, Associate Professor of Medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Common Health Editor Carrie Goldberg. Sorry, Carrie, it's great to
That's
have
okay,
you.
Tiziana.
Thanks for
Thank
being
you.
Here today.